Peter B. Collins, news and comment here on Friday, August 24th, 2012.
I used to fly with my clothes on till the airline clothing ban. We went from scanning to banning. One airline had tanning, and this was the ad they ran. Fly safe, fly naked, no weapons to find. You're safer with nothing on. Naked Airlines.
Now, for the first time in, what, about 10 years, we heard that the restrictions at airport security were going to be lightened up, and you would be allowed to keep your shoes on as you pass through the security checkpoint and the Michael Chertoff Memorial Body Scanner. But the TSA has decided that the shoe risks are too great, and the devices they were using to scan our shoes were inadequate. They tried a box from General Electric. And they also tried one from L3 Communications, one of the big defense contractors. And then one from IDO Security, an Israeli firm. But TSA says they do not pass muster. And all of this is because of a single incident that didn't even occur in the United States. Richard Reed, the shoe bomber, flew from London to the United States. Or actually, he was on a plane from Paris to Miami. Not London. And he tried to detonate his shoes. That is the only worldwide case we know of. And yet every year, what is it, hundreds of millions of passengers have to remove their shoes, endure the embarrassment of holes in their socks, smelly feet. And what is it for? It's for the political theater of airport security. There will never be any relaxation of these rules because, well, we have to preserve the myth that we're keeping Americans safe. Another myth about keeping us safe is the widespread surveillance, and I rail about it on almost every podcast here. Can you tell I want my Fourth Amendment back? There's an interesting, if dense, legal article on a blog called Lawfare, and I'll post a link to it in the show file so you can read it for yourself. Benjamin Wittes, who is a fellow at the Brookings Institute, not a far lefty, not an outside the beltway thinker, still raises interesting issues about an article by another think tanker from a mainstream Washington Institute, Cato. Lean slightly, right? Julian Sanchez has written a piece, and I'll try to boil it down for you because it's a lot of complicated legal arguments, but it tries to develop a theory about why there was so much urgency to ram through the FISA Amendments Act in 2008. If you remember, candidate Barack Obama said he'd vote against it, and then he screwed us all and voted for it in August after he had secured the nomination and before the convention. And it appears that the reason for that scramble was that the Federal Communications Commission had changed its designation of what is a common carrier. And this related to internet communications and email traffic that goes through the pipelines of cable television providers. They're not regulated the same as telephone companies, which are called common carrier. And a common carrier has to make that facility available to others at a reasonable cost. There are all sorts of issues that define what a common carrier is. And so by deciding, and this was pushed by a Supreme Court decision, the FCC entered a rulemaking that took a year to go into effect, but it was going to change the definition and designation of the internet pipes. And that would put them beyond the reach of the old FISA law. It's interesting, and I'm not really qualified to evaluate all the legal arguments, but maybe one of my listeners is. And if you read it and want to send me an email, I would love to hear your thoughts. You can address it to fullofit@peterbcollins.com. And that's me. Here in California, one of my heroes and a friend, Senator Mark Leno in the state legislature, has once again introduced and passed a bill. It's SB 1434, which says that police have to have a warrant before they can search my cell phone and other electronic devices during an arrest. And Leno has passed this bill before, and inexplicably, Governor Jerry Brown vetoed it last year. So he's narrowed it a little bit, and it passed in the Assembly 63-11. Moves on to the State Senate next. But I hope the governor will sign this bill, because I think it is a fundamental right. And the comparison I make, I'm seated opposite a large filing cabinet. Cops cannot come into my office and open that file cabinet drawer without a warrant. Well, my cell phone, my iPad, all my gizmos, they have far more information and more personal information than what is in that file cabinet. But presently under the law, if I am stopped and arrested, they can grab my phone and look at anything they want. I hope the bill is signed by the governor. Gawker has released hundreds of pages of information, not about Mitt Romney's taxes, which we're all curious about, but the financial dealings of Bain Capital since he left. And because he is primarily invested in deals that relate to Bain Capital, it gives us a snapshot of what his holdings are. And I haven't had a chance to really delve into this and evaluate it, but what I see in my initial scan is that he is a tax dodger of incredible proportions. And when he says, well, I paid all the taxes required by law, and then tells you it's 13% on an income in the $20 million range, we know that he is using his high-priced accountants, money managers, to prevent taxes from being paid. And in one of the partnership deals, it appears that hundreds of millions of dollars that would have been subject to the Medicare tax were sheltered. So when he starts to talk about how Medicare is underfunded, maybe he knows more personally about that than we might have given him credit for. Well, Romney and the gang are gathering in Tampa, Florida. And I'm just a little disappointed because last night I had vivid dreams about Hurricane Isaac, causing just a little discomfort for the Republicans gathering in their God-fearing mode, and the hordes of journalists with nothing to cover in a convention that is so carefully orchestrated that they're planning to squeeze out the Ron Paul contingent by conducting the roll call vote for Romney's nomination on the very first night of the convention, where the major networks have announced they will not be providing any coverage whatsoever. So I'm going to have to suck it up and watch Fox. And Fox is comparable to your town's baseball team flagship station, the Homer Sportscasters. And so if you really want to know what Republicans want you to know, it's all right there on the good old Fox News Channel. So I'll be watching and see what occurs there. But fortunately, I have to be busy working on a video shoot Monday and won't get to the action until late evening, which will probably be after the fact, East Coast time. So I may be able to dodge, just as they may be able to dodge Isaac, I'm able to maybe able to dodge some of that particular coverage. And one thing that I think sets a tone for the Republicans is when the Jesus freaks are lying. And here's one. American Center for Law and Justice, this is the Jay Sekulow crowd out of Washington, and they're tied in with Pat Robertson and the hard-right evangelicals from Lynchburg, Virginia. And they open up with a fundraising appeal here. Obama's abortion pill mandate is forcing Americans to violate their constitutionally protected religious liberty. Now, that's a flat-out lie. There's no mandate that anyone anywhere ever take an abortion pill. It's about the availability of an abortion pill. And, of course, they conflate the morning-after pill, which is not really abortion pill, an abortion pill, with, what is it, RU-84, which is, in fact, I believe, biologically and medically, an abortifacient, an abortion, my language is limited there, but you know what I mean. So that's just one example. And here's another, all right? Romney on the stump is pushing for more resource extraction. Oil, gas, and coal. He's not interested in renewables. Nah, not at all. And so he's got a drill, baby, drill mantra. He's proposing to allow more drilling on government lands, to lift the ban on offshore drilling and allow it to be a state responsibility. And he claims it'll produce millions of jobs and stimulate the economy. And I've seen two reports on this. In front of me right now is the one in the New York Times, Friday's edition. And it plays Romney's rhetoric without any reality check. Under Obama, and I don't particularly like this, but under Obama, what we've seen is an expansion of domestic energy production to record highs. We are importing less oil than ever before. And the Times points out that with gasoline hovering again at $4 a gallon, despite a glut of crude oil and a reduction in the consumption of gasoline products in the United States, that we need the Keystone XL pipeline, which will allow tar sands oil from Canada to be shipped through the United States and exported out of Texas. Yeah, that's going to help. Offshore drilling, and a number of other proposals. And there is no reality check to put it in context. And there's no balance to point out that Obama, who presided over the BP oil spill, has promoted more offshore drilling than his predecessors, and I don't like that. And Jay Carney was bragging from the White House podium yesterday about how Obama has restarted construction of nuclear power plants in this country. And the ignorance of Americans after Fukushima and the blowout in the Gulf of Mexico, that we would blindly move forward on both of these fronts, more offshore drilling, more nuclear power plants, it is freaking crazy. And here's a report from my friend Dar Jamail. He covered Iraq for us for many years. Then he covered the blowout in the Gulf. He now writes for Al Jazeera and is based in Qatar. And he posted a story through Al Jazeera English about deformities that are reported on a broad basis in seafood extracted from the Gulf of Mexico near the scene of the BP oil well, the Deepwater Horizon oil rig explosion. Eyeless shrimp, fish with lesions, and not just one here and there. In certain areas, all of the shrimp come in without fish, without eyes, excuse me. And here's a quote from Keith Ladner, a third-generation seafood processor in Hancock County, Mississippi. I seen the brown shrimp catch drop by two-thirds, and so far the white shrimp have been wiped out. The shrimp are immune compromised. We are finding shrimp with tumors on their heads. We're seeing this every day. I'll stop my sick southern accent there. But we don't learn anything. And these aren't ancient examples. Fukushima was 13 or 14 months ago. Well, it's 15, okay. And it was just 2 years ago we were still cleaning up the Gulf of Mexico. And while it's easy to take a whack at drill baby Mitt Romney, Obama is only this much better. He never utters the word global warming or climate change anymore. That was going to be a signature issue for his administration. Here's an interesting case. All political. You know that they've been unable to pass the DREAM Act So Obama ordered ICE, that is the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, not to deport people who would have been eligible for the DREAM Act. These are young folks who grew up in the United States, are not citizens, were brought here by their parents, have gone to school, some served in the military, some have graduated from college, and he is not giving them citizenship, but he is giving them immunity from being forced out of the country, and a status that could allow some of them in California, for example, to hold a driver's license. I fully support that effort. But the Secretary of State of Kansas, in his spare time, has taken on a case of a couple of immigration officers who were suing Janet Napolitano and the Department of Homeland Security, the parent agency of ICE, saying that this new rulemaking would require agents to, it violates a law requiring agents to arrest illegal immigrants, and it infringes on the powers of Congress. Now, this is total bullshit. But get this. Chris Kobach, that's Chris with a K, who is the Republican Secretary of State of Kansas, is also on the Republican Platform Committee, where he has been calling for tough immigration enforcement. More of a political sideshow. And the individuals involved here, just innocent pawns in a political struggle. In yesterday's in-depth interview with Kevin Gostola about the state secrets privilege, he made a reference to the new book being published by what was until today an anonymous member of SEAL Team 6. And it is a blow-by-blow account of the assault on the compound where Osama bin Laden was reportedly living and killed. That occurred in May of 2011. We now know that the guy's name is Mark Bissonnette. He's age 36. He's got 5 bronze stars and a purple heart. And they were trying to keep his identity secret. But Fox News blew his cover. Thank you, Fox. And Penguin said they will go ahead with plans to publish the book. Now, as Kevin Gostola pointed out, this book has not had pre-publication review by the Defense Department. And that is required. The loophole here is that Bissonnette is no longer on active duty, and they're trying to say that he's not subject to these regulations. But hey, Sybelle Edmonds is no longer on active duty. She had to submit her book for pre-pub review. Peter Van Buren being drummed out of the State Department, well, he's no longer on active duty. So it shows that, in this case, a book that is presumably favorable to the president's re-election hopes, gets a pass on the rules that are applied to all the whistleblowers from what they call the most transparent administration in American history. Can you swallow that? It's always interesting. On Fridays, the op-ed page of the New York Times has David Brooks, a right-winger, on the left side, and Paul Krugman, a lefty, on the right side. And today's columns are both about Paul Ryan, and it's rare that I agree with both of these guys, at least in part. David Brooks was a guest on our show once. He came to my secret studio and was clearly uncomfortable here in my liberal surroundings, but I enjoyed meeting him and talking with him. And he describes Paul Ryan, who served on the Simpson-Bowles Deficit Reduction Committee, if you remember, and wouldn't vote for their package when it was finalized. He said, Ryan is giving up significant debt progress for a political fantasy. Ryan's fantasy happens to be the number one political fantasy in America, which has inebriated both parties. It is the fantasy that the other party will not exist. It is the fantasy that you're about to win a 1932-style victory that will render your opponents powerless. Well, I think that Brooks overstates that, particularly when he's talking about Democrats. But I agree with his characterization of Paul Ryan and the fantasy that he lives in. We learned, by the way, that Paul Ryan is worth about $7 million, mostly wealth attributed to his wife, Jana, who comes from a well-connected family in Oklahoma and was a lobbyist in Washington when she met Paul Ryan and married him about 12 years ago. And what Paul Krugman says is that Ryan is now trying to deny his fascination with Ayn Rand. And there are too many quotes on the record that dispute that. But he said the Ryan fiscal program clearly reflects Randian notions. Ryan's reputation for being serious about the budget deficit is completely undeserved. His policies would actually increase the deficit. But he is deadly serious about cutting taxes on the rich and slashing aid to the poor. Very much in line with Rand's worship of the successful and contempt for moochers. Around the world, we see more propaganda supporting Israel's call for an attack on Iran and preventing their nuclear development. Front page in today's New York Times, David Sanger, the Washington bureau chief, writes that Iran is speeding up nuclear work. Now, they've added more centrifuges, about 20% more, at the Fordo plant. And right here in the article, buried in the jump, that's the inside section of the paper, By most American government estimates, Iran would need at least 2 years to develop a workable warhead that would fit atop a missile. At least 2 years. But the Netanyahu government in Israel says, we must act now, we can't wait, the red line has been crossed. Oh, no, no, no! In Afghanistan, we are learning that American and NATO forces are not the only targets of our alleged allies. Afghan soldiers or police officers have killed 53 of their own comrades so far this year, wounded at least 22 others. By that comparison, we're getting off a little easy. 40 NATO service members have been killed by Afghan forces so far this year. They're now calling them insider attacks. And what it just shows is that there is no core to the military occupation of Afghanistan. It is hollow. And that's why it can be, the military police can be infiltrated and alleged allies can be killed. Here in California, the city of Stockton has declared bankruptcy under Chapter 9. And this will be fascinating to watch because, like what happened with the airlines, it is possible that public employees who worked for the city of Stockton will see their pensions reduced or eviscerated. The crunch is that creditors of the city of Stockton, and they're owed about $250 million, are complaining that they're getting bupkis while CalPERS, the state pension fund, is being fully paid its $147 million over the next year or two. And we've seen that federal bankruptcy courts do not consider the contract of a pension to be worth more than any other contract. And it started with the United bankruptcy. American Airlines employees are facing it right now. And I think it's ugly and illegal. But who am I? And finally today, I don't like to report on battles between labor groups, between unions. Because I am a supporter of unions. I've been a member of one for 40 years. And when we fight against each other, we are doing the work of the man. We are making it easier for them to divide and conquer us. But some things must be confronted. And I've been a longtime supporter of the California Nurses Association and their national unit, NNU, National Nurses United. And in full disclosure, I have done some work for them as a consultant. The California Nurses Association successfully lobbied for legislation in California a few years ago to put into effect standardized ratios of nurses to patients to preserve patient care and to protect the rights of nurses from being overworked and overburdened. And now a competing union, SEIU's United Healthcare Workers, is opposing the continuation of these nurse-to-patient ratios. They are supporting a bill that would put these on hold for 2 years and put a couple of exceptions in, saying, well, it doesn't apply to meal penalties, it doesn't apply to breaks. Well, the whole point of staffing ratios was to preserve meal breaks and other breaks for nurses so they wouldn't work a 12-hour shift without a break. And to see a fellow labor union oppose such a basic, fundamental, and reasonable standard is unconscionable. It truly is. Thanks for joining me today for News and Comment. And visit my website at peterbcollins.com. Check out the latest in-depth interviews. And if you haven't set up a subscription account, why don't you do it this weekend? I could really use your support.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then.